Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 27th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's sort of casual Friday. Nomiki Konst will be joining us. Nomiki Konst. The Nomiki Show will be here via video. And then to give you all streaming suggestions, has there ever been a more relevant time to bring on Matthew Film Guy? You'll be joining us with your streaming suggestions, not just for the weekend. Also on the program today, Trump reneges on $1 billion worth of ventilators as being too expensive. Meanwhile, the U.S. has the most confirmed cases as the South begins to get hit. Stimulus watch, $170 billion worth of tax giveaway to real estate and oil interests. And along those lines, the cruise lines incorporated in tax havens and in employment law havens, they complain they get no bail. The EPA decides no need to follow environmental laws because of Corona. House members return to D.C. for fear a vote will be necessary on the stimulus bill. And a new sexual assault allegations against Joe Biden. Meanwhile, a teen turned away for lack of insurance dies of COVID-19. And two Florida poll workers have been tested positive. They worked on that Florida primary 10 days ago. Alex Jones loses another appeal. He now owes $150,000 in other people's legal fees. And his case hasn't even been in front of a jury yet. Koch brother pushed a $1 billion cut to CDC, and now he's fighting shelter in place. And lastly, the Daily Caller gets caught in a price gouging scheme on N95 kits. All this and more on today's program. Oh, that's me. There we go. And how was that sound mix, Matt? Oh, really? What was it? Was it too loud? What happened? Oh, really? So what happened? Do I sound bad? Oh, okay. That's the important part. Folks, welcome to the program. We're still working out details. Matt and I are both upgrading our internet connections, I should say. And so by Monday, we're going to be rock solid. Today, it could be a little bumpy. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know. Yesterday was a little bit, but we're posting all of the content on YouTube, if it's YouTube ready, and we're posting it on to the free feed and the members feed. And so anything that happens live that ends up going down, you know, that falls apart, we're still recording it. That's my point. So none of the content is lost. So we will be here and you can check it out. If you want to become a member of the show, go to jointhemajorityreport.com. We've gotten so many very nice emails that have been really gratifying, and I'm glad that folks are appreciating the show. That really is, it's gratifying. It's a little bit stressful, but it's getting easier every day to do it remotely. And tomorrow I'm going to catch my breath and do a little upgrades to what I got going here. And things should be, by Monday, should be well and good. And now it is time for our plugs and notices, our COVID-19 plugs and notices. And so this is the time. Cue the music. These are plugs and notices that you have sent us, or I have found at, you can send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We're trying not to do too many businesses, but I mean, if you have a small business and it's online and you think it's be helpful for people, or you need the help, send us an email, plugs and notices. Or if there's something local that is helping other people, let us know. Blake from Australia sends a link to a COVID-19 mutual aid groups in Australia. He says it may be a bit out of your way, but we have some Australian listeners. We do. All these links will be in a YouTube description. If you search plugs and notices 327 Sam Cedar YouTube, you should find it. I don't think anybody uses the words plugs and notices, and that's basically why we do it. Baylor from Michigan City, Indiana, sends an email. There is a he is with Organized and United Residents of Michigan City, and he has a link for mutual aid in that area. So check it out. OurMC.org, it is. Also, we put a list of some GoFundMes from ThinkLab. We put a link to that, as well as the GoFundMe that Hunter Walker, the writer, is doing to help support housekeepers and day laborers. That is in the links that we've assembled. Molly wants to plug @OaklandNurse on Twitter and Instagram. That's @OaklandNurse on Twitter and Instagram. He's an ER nurse at a county hospital in Oakland, California. He's also president of his SEIU Local 1021 chapter. And he has 3,000 members in the East Bay hospitals and clinics, everything from nurses, respiratory therapists, and housekeeping. If I'm not mistaken, the SEIU just found hundreds of thousands of N95 masks by going around to suppliers and are, you know, getting those to their members who are working, obviously, as nurses and medical personnel. Working America forwarded some info for us. We have links for unemployment benefits that is state specific. So you go to this site and it will, and then you can choose which state you're in. It will help you with unemployment benefits. You can find it directly by going to careeronestop.org, local help. The AFL-CIO also has COVID-19 state resources. Go to AFL.org, COVID-19 state resources. Check that out. Again, these links will be in the descriptions. Also, we put in a link for Medicaid. If you are, if you've lost your job and you need to find out whether you qualify for the ACA or Medicaid, and maybe you have kids, CHIP as well is available. Head over to usa.gov/Medicaid. We have a link in the description. And if you are in New York or New Jersey, there is an initiative that picks up small batch donations of extra personal protection equipment and delivers them to healthcare providers and facilities in need. And that is covidcollections.com. covidcollections.com. Again, the link will be in the description. And lastly, NextGen Wisconsin sent an email and asked us to to link to the online version of the Pledge to Vote card. It's a card that reminds the youth of America to take action at the polls. It's quick. It takes about 30 seconds. Makes a world of difference to them. And so you can go to nextgenamerica.org, Pledge to Vote 2020. I imagine that voting, when it happens, will be by mail. And this is very helpful. Get young people involved. hugely important, obviously. Those are our plugs and notices. Again, you can send emails to majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject line plugs and notices. Plugs and notices. And we will endeavor to get it out there. Now, joining me via her own studio setup. I mean, I'm impressed. It took me 10 years to get to the where I am, and she's been able to do this in a matter of weeks. The Noma Key show went live. When was the first Noma Key show, Noma Key Const?
It was January 26th, I think. So we're about literally two months old as of yesterday. Yeah. Well,
happy birthday. And folks can get more information on your show, obviously, by going to patreon.com, the Noma Key Show. Also, folks can go to YouTube. And what's the name of your YouTube channel?
It's Nomi Key Const, because I already had subscribers there. We're trying to figure out how to shift it over. It's, you know, this is just really complicated for me. You had 10 years, but we have the internet now and all this time. So it basically just took me spending a bunch of money on Amazon, which I hate to do, but what are we going to do right now?
And that is, I think it's a little bit early, but I mean, soon, you know, there are going to be massive changes when this is over. There's going to be massive. I mean, and part of the problems that we have, I think, with the stimulus is, you know, I think I used this analogy yesterday where it's, you know, we're all, you know, all businesses and all people are, for the most part in this country, are now, you know, sort of driving in the Indy 500 under the yellow flag. Mm-hmm. And the stimulus came in and basically said to a small segment of the population, I mean, maybe not even people, I mean, corporations, and who are ultimately people, right? I mean, you know, these corporations lobby for this, not because of the good of the corporation, but because it's, you know, payouts to shareholders and CEOs and board of directors. And the stimulus dumped so much more money, made so much more money available for them as opposed to everyone else, that it is going to distort what our society looks like even more so on the other side of this. Amazon is one of those things that we're going to see this distortion because, you know, they're ramping, they're hiring 100,000 people. It's a huge, important service right now for a lot of people because there's no, you know, you don't want people to go out. Although people could theoretically, you know, ordered from directly from the suppliers of this stuff to the extent that it hasn't been wiped out by Amazon. But this is just going to wipe out more businesses on the other end of this. I mean, you know, I interviewed folks a while back about Amazon's not looking to be the Amazon's looking to be the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Like like the idea is that like there is no, you don't buy anything outside of Amazon. Everything is bought within Amazon. They're looking to be almost the sort of retail economy, period. And this is, you know, I don't know what the answer is to that, other than to have a government that sort of cares about that as an end result.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a monopoly economy. And think about all the small restaurants right now that most likely probably won't be able to get through this. I mean, the world that we see on the other end of this is just going to be more, the people who can support themselves right now through the storm personally, you know, might be able to make it because they have savings, because they have investments, whatever it is. But the small businesses, the medium-sized businesses, and even like the small chain restaurants, I'm just thinking about restaurants, you know, they probably won't do well. I mean, the restaurant owners decided to lay off hundreds of thousands of people in an instant because they saw what was coming. And who's going to be able to survive? It is monopolies. And so the world that we see after this is going to be even more monopolized. And I just don't know where those workers go. I mean, if we had a gig economy before, like how does it shift? How do we have an economy that's just a monopoly system? You know, we have a mix right now, but where do we go? I mean, are they going to have small business loans? Are they going to have mid-level? I mean, do these companies get bailed out?
Well, there are small business loans in the stimulus, but you know, the Small Business Administration is, from what I understand, you know, one of the sort of least functioning within the context of our government. And it's unclear how these loans are going to get distributed. I don't know if you just go to a bank and you know, you get the loan, and supposedly for payroll, it may be forgiven. We need to see more of the details. And there's bound to be some abuse about that. But I mean, like at this, you know, in this situation, you deal with the abuse retroactively. You know, you don't try and constrain it so much so that it slows the money going back going out there. I want to talk about this first, Nomi, because what we're seeing around the country, there's this sort of like, you know, there was a brief period of time where it seemed like Trump had gone from complete denial, and all the right wingers had gone from complete denial about this, where you literally had Sean Hannity, who is, you know, he's not Donald Trump's chief of staff, but he is one of his top advisors. I mean, been reported. And so when Sean Hannity is saying something, he's either saying it for Trump's benefit or because Trump has asked him to, or he is, you know, they have talked about where things should go. I'm sure there's some measure of independence between them, but I don't imagine it's enough that you could drive, you know, a four-wheel vehicle through. And, you know, he had Fauci on 2 weeks ago and was arguing this is just like the flu. Then it reverted, and now it feels like it's coming back. Here is Trump on Sean Hannity's program. And Brendan's able to play this. Here's Trump on Sean Hannity's program last night, downplaying now the need for ventilators in New York City. Nomi, I know that you've probably been following this. You're not in the city at the moment, but all our friends are there. And it is a disaster. Like the number of deaths and confirmed cases is like doubling over the course of a day. And it is becoming more and more problematic. New York State feels that they need somewhere between 20 and 40,000 ventilators. And Cuomo was even out there the other day, just basically saying like, you know, some of what we've done may have been a mistake in retrospect, but we weren't getting any guidance, right? I mean, the expertise should be coming from the feds. Here's Donald Trump now. They have decided, because apparently the deal that they had with Ford and GE is going to cost $1 billion to get all the ventilators they need. Now they're backing off it because it's too expensive. And here's Donald Trump trying to set the table for that.
But I have a feeling that a lot of the numbers that are being said in some areas are just bigger than they're going to be. I don't believe you need 40,000 or 30,000 ventilators. You know, you go into major hospitals sometimes, they'll have two ventilators. And now all of a sudden they're saying, can we order 30,000 ventilators? So, look, it's a very bad situation. We haven't seen anything like it. But the end result is we got to get back to work, and I think we can start by opening up certain parts of the country, you know, Farm Belt, certain parts of the Midwest, other places. But
this is insanity. This is insanity. We already have more cases than any other country in the world. Now, maybe, you know, there's definitely reason to be suspicious of China's numbers, right? And so we don't know, but and it's conceivable that they, you know, had three times or five times or, you know, the amount of cases that we're reporting, because they have a much bigger, country, but they definitely were able to contain it in a way that we're not able to do it. And
that's the concern. Where the pace that we're going at right now is, it's ridiculous with the health system that we're supposed to have.
Well, there's two different problems here, right? There is the health system is going to get overwhelmed.
Right.
But our containment and our mitigation of that is like they're working against it. Yep. I mean, I've got half a dozen stories here of like you know, in Alabama, the governor saying like, meh, we're not, you know, New Orleans, we're not California, we're not New York, we don't need to do this. I got a story here in Moss Point, Mississippi. It's a Gulf Coast town, which presumably, you know, it's like, I guess it's on the Redneck Riviera. And they, you know, I don't know if it is specifically, but it sounds like it might be where, you know, you get a lot of people coming to the beach. It attracts a lot of tourism. That's why New Orleans has got such problems. And the mayor ordered a basically, you know, a stay at home shelter in place order. And the governor overrode him, said, no, not happening. I mean, this is the type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to see, like, you know, there's this, there's a city in Georgia, I can't remember, Albany, Georgia, that has been just overwhelmed. And we're going to start to see pockets like this. And a big part of it is because they're sitting there getting their cues from the president, who's saying this is all exaggerated. Right. They're getting the cues from Hannity, who's saying this is all exaggerated. These people are going to go out there. This is where, I mean, we're looking at, I mean, it is a horrific tragedy, I think, that we're watching.
It's interesting. So I'm in Arizona right now, and I've said this to you off camera that when I got here, I felt like I was in a time warp. And granted, I was coming from New York City, which of course is in a very different situation than Arizona. But I felt like, you know, Arizona was a week behind, the way that when I was talking to a friend of mine in Paris, you know, a month ago, who was like, why are you guys not talking about coronavirus and in the debates? And he was saying to me, the elections are going to get canceled. I was like, you are crazy. What are you talking about? The elections aren't going to get canceled. And that's how I feel when I come from New York coming to Arizona, which is you go to the grocery stores and they're elderly out at, I mean, all elderly, basically. It's like what they're doing during the day. Going to the grocery stores, they're not practicing good. I mean, there's no social distancing at all. I've seen multiple people like wipe their noses and touch things because I'm, you know, paying more attention to this. It makes you think how many people do that just regularly without the coronavirus. But I mean, if people are having birthday parties, friends of mine invited me to birthday parties. They're going over to people's houses. I'm really concerned about the information of red states versus blue states right now. And I think, you know, when we talk about partisanship, that what you're saying about Hannity is spot on. I have family members who understand this is a pandemic, but it's not registering to them the amount they have to step up what responsibility actually means. It doesn't mean that, oh, I'm practicing this so I can still go out and go to the grocery store five times a day. I mean, it's just, there's a disconnect. And I also see that people, because they're not as tapped into information as say maybe our universes and how information is dispersed in New York, you know, you have it on these street signs and, you know, in taxi cabs, on subways. I think people don't know where to find the information either. I have an aunt here who's like, I don't know where to go. I'm like, watch the press conferences every day on CNN. She's like, yeah, but it's just so much information. And I had to stop and not get annoyed and think, how many people in America right now are in that situation? They may not be in a blue state. They may not be the right winger that's watching Fox News all day long, but they also may not be tapping into the news on Twitter every 5 seconds and getting the most updated or effective information. I mean, it could be through Facebook. It could be through email chains. I don't know how they're getting information.
Well, I mean, that is a part of the, I mean, you have basically, you know, three different cohorts here, right? And 3 or 4 days ago, I saw a civics poll that showed civics is the, it's not, I'm not talking ending with a C, I'm ending with a C, with a Q, S-C-I-V-I-Q. It's a polling outfit. And they showed, you know, New York, California, the number of people taking it seriously, very seriously, was like 53%. And then another 27% taking it somewhat seriously. And the numbers, and then, you know, you look at other states and it's well below 50. And there, we're talking about a couple of different cohorts, right? Like there's the Fox News watching ones who are just like, this ain't real.
Right.
This is, you know, the real problem is that, you know, Fauci, he's a fan of Hillary Clinton. He's part of the deep state or whatever it is. And then there's the other people you're talking about who are just like, the president wouldn't go up there and say this isn't serious if it wasn't serious. I mean, like, they wouldn't let him do that, right? And it's like, even though they know it's Donald Trump, it's sort of like it's almost too hard to sort of wrap your mind around the idea that they, whoever they are, would let the president go up and say it's like the flu if it wasn't like the flu. And so they can hear Donald Trump say that, and then they can hear, you know, Wolf Blitzer say this is not like the flu, and that just leaves them as like, I don't know what to believe.
Right.
And so that hesitation in and of itself, you know, is it enough to keep them from going to the birthday party? Is it enough to keep them from going to the beach? In a lot of instances, no. And, you know, this is, I mean,
there's a libertarian spirit to Americans. Like, let's not forget who we are. I mean, clearly this has been an issue across the globe, getting people to stay home and not go out. It's human nature. You know, I even know I've been self-quarantined for the last 14 days. And towards the end of it, I started to kind of loosen up and forget, you know, my little habits that I was, the rituals I had in this house. So it is human nature. Even the most conscious people sometimes fall off the wagon a little bit. But I mean, China literally had to round people up and force them to stay inside. I mean, we are not that, we don't have that kind of government, but there is such a libertarian stretch to there's this slant to our politics that even I think the most progressive people have a little bit of it in them in America.
I think that's true. I mean, Massachusetts, I remember, I mean, I was a kid, it must've happened, I don't know, 30 years ago, the seatbelt law, people were mad about the seatbelt law in Massachusetts. You can't tell me what to do in my car, that type of thing. I mean, it was a big deal. And you know, the motorcycle helmet law, things like this. And, but with that said, it's nuts. It's nuts because it's one thing for individual Americans to say like, man, I don't feel comfortable with this. It's another for the government that is supposed to be the voice of, you know, that is supposed to be protecting its own people. I'm not saying that the government, you know, they're just offering false information that is going to end up getting people killed. And it's just been, there's a lack of seriousness about this. There's just a lack of seriousness. And it's, you know, and if it's not like these folks coming from the government, theoretically should be on the outer edge of caution, right? Like they should be the furthest out there going like, stay at home. You know what I mean? And the idea that they're not, it's terrifying. Let's play this clip. And this again, we're seeing this all over again. The idea that they are running this like it's a political campaign. And the goal of this political campaign is to sell to the American public that New York State, and, you know, like presumably, like even if the ventilators went to New York State, at one point there might be excess and they could give to another state, right? Like it's not like we're taking these ventilators and putting them in a, you know, some type of wood chipper.
If he wanted to play privatization, he could sell it to another country. I'm not making that argument. I'm just saying there's so many other scenarios that Trump could have gone with.
The idea that it's too, we can't afford $1 billion after just passing a $2 trillion stimulus package, not to mention what we're leveraging with the Fed. We can't spend $1 billion on ventilators. Here is Ainsley Earhart and Geraldo Rivera. Basically, well, Ainsley is running this campaign, which is they don't really need the ventilators that they need.
I see, for instance, Andrew Cuomo saying 4,000 ventilators. What am I going to do with 4,000 ventilators? I need 30,000. Take the 4,000, Governor Cuomo. It's a start. I understand from Dr. Birx, Ambassador Birx on the president's coronavirus task force, that there are still available hospital beds in New York, still available ICU space and ventilators. I understand. It's my city has been hurt and people are really afraid. But let's get on the same page when it comes to telling the American people what we're doing and where we're going. This is not the time for partisanship, not the time for politics. Rally around the commander in chief. He is the wartime president. Let's win this war.
They're all playing the blame game. I was watching Sean Hannity last night interviewed the president, and the president said, look, to Governor Cuomo, he said, 30,000 ventilators, I would love to give you those, but some hospitals only have one. He said, you really need 30,000? If you do, we'll do our best. But he said, we have, it's complicated. They're expensive to make. So I agree with you, Geraldo. I think it's not time to do the blame game. Take what you can get, and then we'll worry about the rest.
I mean, this is just stunning. This is stunning. Like they're running a campaign to try and convince people we don't need ventilators. And that's the thing is that, you know, once we hit that peak, once the number of patients goes above the number of ventilators and ICU beds, and look, you might have 100 beds, you know, may have an extra 500, 1,000 beds in New York City, but if they're not in the right place, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Right. Like the idea that we're going to have to do like on time, supply lines is absurd with this. There's going to be waste in this situation. It's the only way you're going to save lives because you don't know where you're going to need all these things. And the idea of they're running a campaign on you don't need to have ventilators is just it's almost impossible to imagine.
And fall in line with the commander in chief because we're at war. I mean, so Chris Cuomo started, you know, beating the drum of war a few weeks ago. And I kind of saw where it was going to go this way because this is the perfect argument for Trump. I don't know why he ever decided to use that term. And every night on CNN, we're at war. No, we're not at war. And if you're basically framing the political messaging for Donald Trump at this point, which, by the way, I also think this is why, you know, Andrew Cuomo, why people are falling for him right now, because he's taking control. He is saying like, stay home. He's actually being the authoritarian that he is, you know?
Well, there's so much desperate need for somebody just to like, you know, who you think is competent to actually say something that anybody who projects that is going to be, is going to get praise at this point.
Exactly.
Well, we'll talk more about Cuomo because, you know, like I think we should have 20, 30,000 ventilators in the state. And, you know, you want to put some type of like auditor associated with them that if they're not being used and they're just sitting in a warehouse that they go somewhere else, that's all well and good. But we're at the epicenter of this thing. And
this is the same government that sent all these materials and supplies to Puerto Rico and then blamed the local government, which is not, the most clean cut local government either. But they blamed the local government for not distributing them and corruption and waste. When meanwhile, it was the U.S. government's what they did, what FEMA did when they weren't, the delays to getting water bottles to Puerto Rico, other supplies to Puerto Rico. They just sat on the docks for like 8 months. So if government, I don't understand, you know, they use waste when it's convenient. And what I don't understand about this situation is why are they choosing this fight? What's on the other end of it? If they don't release the ventilators, I mean, is it just a bargaining chip right now?
They don't want to pay for them. And I think on some level it is like, I think the idea is, I think part of it is he probably wants to make sure they have the ventilators for states that he thinks are important for him to win. I mean, I think this sounds incredibly crass, but I think they're saying, well, if we send 30,000 ventilators to New York and he's got an extra 5,000 ventilators there, I won't be able to send them to these other places. So send an auditor, but he would rather err on the side of people dying in New York State than the hypothetical version of people dying in other areas because, you know, that are more important to his reelection.
And why would he hand Andrew Cuomo that win, you know?
I mean, when you say like, let's not play politics, that's exactly what's going on here. Donald Trump is not doing anything in his entire response to this entire thing has been a function of what he thought was best for his reelection chances, period. End of story.
Maybe if there was a company, a CEO that donated money to Donald Trump's campaign that produced ventilators, he could lobby him to release them to New York. line item them. I don't know what they do. I mean, how could you appeal to this madman who's playing politics right now?
It's absolutely nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Let's play this clip about from AOC. Now, what's happening with the stimulus bill at this point is the House was hoping to approve the Senate passed stimulus bill by voice vote, and apparently a congressman from Kentucky, Massey, has threatened that he will basically, and all it takes is one member to say, I object to a voice vote. And then you got to actually do a roll call vote, but you need to be present to do the roll call vote. I guess that's the difference. I mean, I don't know the specific rules, but that's my understanding. And so right now you have about at least you need, I think like 218, 219 House members to be present to establish, to vote for, in a specific vote to vote for it in Washington, D.C. And so this jackass is making everybody go back there. They're all obviously going to pass it. But I mean, on some level, I mean, I don't understand how somebody does that. I really don't understand. You know, it's one thing if they're all going back to vote against it and they're trying to get a better bill. But here is, let's talk about AOC is on the, she was on the House floor and she's talking about this Senate bailout bill, which, as we mentioned earlier, is going to reshape the country. Now, presumably we're going to get other bites at this apple, right? I mean, that's certainly what like folks like Sanders and Warren are putting out there and other, you know, progressives in the Democratic caucus, that there's going to be another chance to do this. And I would imagine there's going to be. But there's no reason to believe that it's not going to follow this form once you establish it, right? And but here is AOC talking about this bill.
What did the Senate majority fight for? One of the largest corporate bailouts with as few strings as possible in American history. Shameful. The greed of that fight is wrong for crumbs for our families. And the option that we have is to either let them suffer with nothing or to allow this greed and billions of dollars, which will be leveraged into trillions of dollars, to contribute to the largest income inequality gap in our future. There should be shame about what was fought for in this bill and the choices that we have to make.
Now, here's the thing, right? If the House doesn't approve it, it's the Democrats' fault.
Yeah.
Right? Because they control the House. But if the Senate doesn't approve it, it's the Republicans' fault. And so, you know, the failure, I think, happens in the Senate. I mean, obviously it's tougher because they have a majority there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Chuck Schumer did, you know, this is a bad job. They did a bad job. And the only thing that Chuck Schumer was bragging about is that they managed to make sure that, you know, no members of Congress and no family members of the president can get access to the slush fund. Of course, real estate got $170 billion tax break in this. So of course they're getting their piece. It's stunning. The failure is just stunning.
You know, I subscribe to these like lobbyist report, you know, there's reporters and they have these email lists that go out every day. And one tracks, you know, what lobbyists are doing in Washington. They have amped up so much during this crisis. And if you don't subscribe to these, I don't love Politico, but they do have a decent lobbyist report. So take a look at it. They've amped up their lobbying in Washington I don't think I've seen this in the last 10 years, this level of lobbying that's happening right now. And that should be an indicator. In preparation for the stimulus, they brought on all their lobbying firms, you know, everything from the restaurant trades, you know, and some of it's very understandable. Of course, we all want a piece of it. But, you know, it's that big money. We know exactly who's going to get the biggest piece of it. And Schumer, like, what are you're in such a bubble right now that you're listening to these guys. over the crisis that's in front of you. I mean, it is so hard to ignore the urgency of this crisis and what we're about to face. And for him to make a conscious decision to once again give tax breaks to real estate who don't need these tax breaks, because in New York in particular, they haven't paid taxes in how long? Right.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, that's an argument why you need people in there. I mean, I think, you know, in the context of the normal day to day, there's an opportunity to push people based upon, you know, the constituency. Like, it, you know, I think easier to push Joe Biden on some things than it would be on Donald Trump, because Donald Trump has to respond to the Republican Party. Joe Biden has to respond to the Democratic Party, let's say. But particularly in moments like these, where it's a crisis, where there are sort of like exogenous forces that are creating pressure because it's a crisis, you need people who have some type of like foundational, you know, disposition against this stuff to withstand that type of pressure and to just like conceive of a bill that doesn't start with corporate bailouts, you know, and then goes on to where the people are, but rather it goes the opposite way. And we don't have that. That's the problem. We just don't have that.
How much worse can it get? I just, it's really hard for my mind to even, I can't wrap my mind around the fact that like, we already have the starkest income inequality since 1929. CEOs are already making hundreds of times more than they did 15 yep. years ago. How much worse could it get? Are we just going to privatize the entire economy for four monopolies? Is New York, I mean, I think they're seeing, thank God Naomi Klein's talking about this, but the disaster capitalism here.
Yep, of course. That's exactly what's going on. And we saw it, look, you know, we saw it in New Orleans after Katrina. We saw, I think it could be all charter schools down there now. And we saw a lot of residents were basically prevented from returning. Mm-hmm. Their real estate developers went in there and made, you know, high-end condo, buildings. And I mean, this is in many respects, obviously there's no damage to physical structures, but in terms of the structures of our economy, that's what is so problematic about this. It is not just the lack of generousness to people. And, you know, and part of that is just like, we don't have a society that is built in such a way that you could step in and fix this thing, right? Like, so for instance, you know, like Denmark is paying employers. They'll pay 90% of the employee's salary. Yeah. If the employer pays them to stay home.
UK is discussing it right now. I mean, the UK is discussing a very similar measure at 80%.
And the thing is that like, okay, then the question becomes like, what about people who aren't working? What about people who were laid off 2 months ago? But they already have systems that deal with that.
That's right.
They have pre-existing systems. Like, so we have a situation here. It's like, what happens to the healthcare? Okay. We had 3 million people lose their jobs last week. This week, we're probably going to have 6 million people lose their jobs. It could be more. In the course of 2 weeks, we're going to have about 2.5 weeks. We could have about 10 million people lose their jobs. Where do they go for healthcare? Right. Like, you know, like just like what system can absorb these people? Like, even if tomorrow we said everybody gets into Medicaid, how are they going to go and sign up for Medicaid?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're like, we don't have the apparatus for this. We have no structures to deal with any of this. And I don't know where people are going to get their healthcare. It's going to, you know, you're in like four different, you know, sort of tiers. Some people might be able to pay for COBRA with the money they get from the extended unemployment insurance. Some people might qualify for the ACA. Maybe they'll have to have some type of special provision for the ACA. Some people might qualify for Medicaid. I mean, it is like just sorting through that in a time of crisis is just bizarre. Like,
we can't even handle our taxes right now.
I mean, exactly. I mean, we have no underlying processes. And this, you know, this is the ventilators. It's all, it is all, there's a lot of ideology involved in this, but this is the illustration of the problem that we have in this country. Is just sort of like, you know, you hear people like, I don't want Medicaid waste and Medicare fraud and this and that. And like, there's too much slack in the system. And, you know, the bottom line is that this is a metaphor. What's happening to our society is a metaphor to what happens to the individual. That's been happening all the time. Like, there's just no room for them. Like, it's, everything is so precarious. And even emergency measures cannot cover it because we don't have enough of a foundation to deal with this. And that's what happens in people's individual lives. And it happens society wide in something like this. And, you know, I think we're at the beginning of this. I think we're at the beginning of it from a health perspective. And I think we're at the beginning of this, obviously, from an economic perspective. And I think it's just going to get worse.
What I don't see, though, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, I mean, as much as I can, their game plan. What do they plan to privatize? I understand. Okay, so if everybody's moving out of New York because they can't pay their rents and they're not freezing rent, Cuomo refuses to freeze rent, guys, just so you know, your savior, your crush, Cuomo, won't freeze rent in New York right now. But he's protected mortgages. You know, and I guess that helps the small units if somebody owns, you know, a smaller multifamily unit and they need that rent to pay the mortgage. I guess there's an argument there. But you could do both if you weren't owned by real estate. Right. So, you know, New York, for instance, I get it. Like, people are going to move out of New York. They're already doing so. They could, you know, we're already at that point in New York. And that might happen in other cities, like it did with New Orleans, like Puerto Rico. You know, no one pays attention to Puerto Rico, but, you know, they're doing massive developing there. And people are leaving the island more and more. So it's sort of a changed economy in Puerto Rico now. But how does it happen on a national level? And how does it happen in the midst of a crisis? I mean, by the time of the election, I don't even think we're going to be done with this crisis. I think, you know, we're going to have waves of quarantines, if you're listening to what Fauci's saying. There's going to be hot spots. The hot spots are likely to be cities, you know, with Democratic voters. I'm trying to game this out and understand, where is the profit making?
Well, I think, there is no, what is their strategy? The their, THEIR, is our disparate players who are specifically looking for their own interests, but they have an advantage in society. The Fed is now giving them $4 trillion worth of loan ability. And, like, you know, look, I'm a crappy businessman, but if the Fed loans me $10 million, basically interest free, you know, I'm going to make a ton of money. I'm going to make money even if I just put it in a CD, but I'll go out and I'll buy a building in New York. I'll buy like a four person, you know, four family unit in New York or something, or three family unit. And I, you know, the money up front is the tough part. And by, you know, within a year or two, I'll have rent coming in. I'll be able to service any type of loan I get to replace the loan that I got to pay back. And boom, I'm in. And I'm making money. And that's, you know, this is a very narrow, you know, example. But the point is that you're giving money to people who are already well positioned to take advantage of this situation. So, like I say, everybody else is driving under the yellow flag, and you get a free pit stop, and they fill you up with gas, and they say, okay, everybody else has got to go 35 miles an hour under this yellow flag. You can go 120 miles an hour. And it's just, all the wealth is going to continue to concentrate, and it's just going to sort of exponentially feed off itself.
Think about automation on top of it. Have you thought about this? Just the workforce that's likely to be obliterated in multiple industries, and they've been trying to figure out how to automate and lay off. I mean, here you go. Here's a great opportunity to cut your costs.
I mean, that's what I was saying. You know, that's what I was sort of alluding to with the Amazon thing. Automation is part of it. This is going to change the structure of the workforce. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to end up working from home after this that hadn't before. I would imagine 10 to 15% of the jobs that used to go into an office are going to be working at home because, you know, people are going to say like, oh, we were able to do X, Y, and Z. Now that's going to you know, I don't know if I want to do that, frankly, work from home, you know, for the rest. I personally don't know if I would care, but, you know, it's going to change the nature of our society in some ways. And, you know, talk about like the idea that we were already becoming, more distant, and it is going to, you know, it's going to create a narrower band of worker power, that exists only in those jobs you have to be there for, I think on some level. Those are the ones that are least likely, obviously, to be you work from home. I think there's, it's hard to say where all this is going, but, you know, hopefully.
And you're going to have a massive number of people who are unemployed, I mean, who aren't able to shift into the new economy or whatever the next bullshit is and get trained in the new jobs. You know, there's always going to have, you're always going to have, you know, older populations who are, you know, shifted out of the labor force for whatever reasons, but it's going to be massive. And it, I mean, regardless of whether or not these businesses rebuild, even in the next couple of years, will be massive. And we don't have the infrastructure, as you just said, to protect our citizens. We already have a problem. If you don't want to spend on, you know, government spending, then don't put yourself in a scenario like this. And I just
go ahead. Well, I there's a couple of things I wanted to touch on before, just before we go. One is, well, basically about the primary. And one, I'm hearing, and I wonder if you've heard this because you have a lot of connections in these circles, that the Democratic primary in New York is they're trying to push that back.
Yeah.
What have you heard about that?
That they're trying to push it back, that the chair of the party, Jay Jacobs, who was not elected, let's just be clear. So just as a, you know, premise here, the Democratic Party in New York, unlike really any other Democratic party, state party in the country, is not Democratic, shocker. It's made up of people that were basically hand selected by Governor Cuomo as a slate, essentially, to govern this party. You know, it's very hard to infiltrate the party. There have been some folks who've been able to do so, but it's a small, small, small caucus. Partly because most people don't understand the rules and they're murky and, you know, nobody shows up to vote and blah, blah, blah. But Governor Cuomo's chair is Jay Jacobs, who's from Long Island. And he has been pushing for the primary to basically be eliminated.
Oh, really?
Postponed or eliminated. I mean, that's the two options right now. I think, you know, Jay Jacobs is very close to Governor Cuomo. Governor Cuomo, you know, it was an early endorser of Joe Biden. They actually use the same firms, consulting firms. So SKD Knickerbocker is a firm out of New York. And Anita Dunn is one of the founders, and she's a senior advisor to Joe Biden. They've been very involved in DNC sort of mechanisms. I actually look at the Democratic Party in New York, and it sort of mirrors how the DNC functions. And there's no other state that does that. California, you know, is not perfect, but they have a rambunctious party that has debates and a convention. And I mean, it's an illusion here in New York. So, you know, I find all this conversation about Cuomo to be fascinating, and I think anything can happen at this point, but he does have a scenario where he could very, if there was that option to bring somebody else in, even as a vice presidential candidate, I could very well see it being Andrew Cuomo because of the relationships, because of the infrastructure in the DNC that mirrors the one in New York State, because a lot of the New York State delegation is very influential in the DNC as like the appointed consultants that sit on the rules committees, et cetera. It really is advantageous, purposely advantageous towards Andrew Cuomo, who is not our friend.
Exactly.
Let's just remind everybody.
But now Cuomo, they can't make him vice president, right? I mean, Biden's already committed to choosing a woman. I just, I just think that would be a disaster for Biden.
If you're running against Pence and Trump, what are you going to lose? If it's Andrew Cuomo, who everyone's, you know, saying is like the savior right now, you know, it might be better than Stacey.
What are you going to get? honestly. Everybody's saying that in New York, but people in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, sure, they don't know who Andrew Cuomo is. They don't care. And all you're going to do is piss off, you know, one of the biggest and most important constituencies in the Democratic Party, which is like, wait, you're saying that nobody is as competent as Andrew Cuomo? Andrew Cuomo is the only competent person, so you have to have this guy even after you committed to having a woman? I mean, that would, I think, destroy him. But Cuomo, certainly, I would imagine, he's going to get something super choice in the administration. I don't know what it is, but
let's not forget, he's been the Secretary of HUD in the 90s under Bill Clinton. He was a young Secretary of Housing.
Yep.
He was Attorney General in New York. You know, this is not a guy who's going to settle for like some cabinet position again. You know, he's been there, done that. He wants to be president. He would probably stay governor before being appointed to something else. Some people said chief of staff, but I don't think that's his. Yeah, I think he's not a Rahm Emanuel type. He wants to be calling the shots and getting the credit and on camera every day, clearly.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the primary. And, let's see if we can bring in, can Jamie come on now? Because I know she wants to talk about what's going on with the Biden Me Too stuff. But before we get there, let's talk about the primary. Like Sanders said that he was open to the debate. And Biden said, we're not going to have a debate, man. Come on. And Joe Biden is there. Now, I have to say, you have been able to set up a video thing that looks pretty good. And, you've been able to swing it. Biden's still having problems. I mean, where are we in the primary? I mean, it seems to me almost impossible for Sanders to make up the delegates he needs. I don't know if that necessarily means that he shouldn't stay in the race. I don't know why. Like, I don't see how it's hurting Joe Biden in any fashion. And it's not like Joe Biden's like, the only reason why I can't get traction here is because Bernie's, still in the race. That seems to be ridiculous. But what is your sense of this?
If you talk to people. My sense, so I think it was today on NPR, I saw the clip from NPR. It was either today or yesterday. Bernie was being interviewed, I think it was Morning Edition today. And he said, essentially that he's very focused on COVID. And, he opened, and the reporter asked, what's your path forward? Are you staying in this race? And she expected, she said it, I expected you to just say yes. And he said, instead, we have a very steep hill to climb and we're focused on COVID. And, we're out there. We can't knock on doors. We can't have rallies. We had hundreds of thousands of volunteers across the country doing those things, knocking on doors and making voter contact. And we can't do that now. So we're doing phone banking and, letting people know about what they can do in their communities, in response to COVID, the COVID crisis. And he's focused on the legislation clearly. And this is a moment where they would help many people. But I think at the end of the day, in terms of the delegate math, I mean, listen, half of the Democratic primary voters have not voted. It is absolutely unprecedented that somebody who won the first three states and California is not our nominee. Like,
right,
that alone, I mean, if he were to make any argument, it would be that. In what world has this ever happened? You basically won by electioneering by your people. That's the only reason why, Joe Biden is suddenly the presumed nominee, is because he won South Carolina, which we all knew. And then, everything shifted by design. I just don't think people have it in them right now. He needs a really passionate movement, which he has, focused on electoralism. And it's just extremely hard at this moment to get that energy. And it already was hard enough for him to expand his
voting. Right.
I don't know how he's going to do that.
And so what's the idea of him maintaining the campaign? I mean, is it, what do you think the theory is here? Is it, I'm hanging in because, maybe one day they turn on the camera and Joe's just like, I can't do it, I'm just too tired, or whatever it is. Or do you think it's also a certain amount of that progressive needs some leverage in coming stimulus bills? I mean, we're not done with this. I don't think we're done with the stimulus bill by a long shot. And, you know, we're on phase three, but I, you know, you don't start calling them phases, you know, around phase two, if you don't, if you think it ends with phase three. I mean, right. And I think everybody knows it's going to be, you know, multiple phases. So what is he, is the idea that this gives him some leverage in the context of, I mean, because I got to tell you, like, you know, I talked to Dayan about the stimulus bill, and he was rather disappointed with not just with Sanders, with Warren, with all of the progressives for not blocking this bill. And he was saying, like, you know, Sanders is out there arguing for this, you know, the expansion of unemployment. He's doing the work. He's doing that at behest of the Democratic leadership. He's part of the Democratic leadership. He is, you know, outreach chair. You know, it's a made up position and whatnot, but he's there, and it is, you know, that it's for real. So, you know, what do you think the theory is?
I understand what David's saying. I just don't think, I think the alternative would have been look at Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren blocking our urgent, like something that we could have, money that we could have gotten into the hands of Americans right away. And that ultimately is what it comes down to, is it's like, you know, Sarah Nelson she's been so smart about how she negotiates, but she's also there as the real estate industry is there, you know, using her own leverage in a time of crisis. But it's harder from a position, you know, when you're in the Senate, you have to respond to voters. You have a movement that is very influential in this election and that has been blamed for everything that they're probably not responsible for. And to have Bernie Sanders hold up the stimulus, I mean, that's going to be on Fox News. Socialist purity tests preventing you from getting your $1,200 check. And I mean, I don't know necessarily how he could play the politics a little bit, you know, dirtier maybe, to get what he wants. But for the election, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, Joe Biden is vulnerable. Joe Biden, you know, is afraid to go on camera. I, you say that about the set, but when he was gone for 9 days, I tweeted that out, that in, you know, 48 hours, I ordered all the equipment I needed, and I'm no rockets. I know nothing about technologies, you know, very well. And I figured it out myself. And he has people on his team that are way more sophisticated than I am and getting paid a lot of money. So I want to know where all his money is going right now. You know, the people who bought your ads, maybe they could also like take a half an hour and set up a live stream camera and do a regular live, even if it's just on Facebook. But yeah, Biden's vulnerable. And I think at the end of the day, Bernie needs to figure out how he's going to leverage. And that is the Achilles, in my opinion, it's the Achilles heel of Bernie. He doesn't know how to leverage his movement in the right way that's actually going to be able to change people's lives. The platform of the Democratic Party that I was on, that platform committee, was a whole lot of drama for a whole lot of nothing. And right. Yeah, we could campaign around and say we passed the most progressive platform in the history of the Democratic Party that most Democrats don't follow. That 2 days later, Hillary Clinton went off after we banned fracking on the Democratic platform. She went off and had a fundraiser with a CEO of a fracking, you know, oil and gas company. Okay. No, we have to do more than that. I mean, I would set demands like, you know, Bernie Sanders chooses the DNC chair. Because that's real. I mean,
right. That's a real you get a real personnel. Yeah. And as an example, and we're going to have to take a break here because I think our feed is dead. And so we're going to head to the fun half and then you'll come back. But just to wrap this up, the one of the things that Bernie could have done was, you know, it's easy for me to say this. And so maybe there were restraints on this and maybe he was asked not to. You know, like, you know, this is a hard, it's a very easy for us to sort of say like they should do this or they should do that. But like when you're one of 50 people or 100 people who are like, am I going to keep 3 million people who have just been in 6 million people this week? You know, we're talking about 10 million people losing their jobs. Has never happened in the history of this country where you have, you know, this many people lose this amount of work this quickly. It's never happened. And the idea, like, I'm going to hold this up because, you know, I don't want the Fed to leverage, you know, stuff that people can't understand. And you're going to, you know, and you're going to try and mobilize people at that point. Like, it would have been great if he could do that, but the movement is just not as strong enough. right? Like, it's just not, you know, the, it raises a whole other questions, and maybe we can save this for next week. Let's take a quick break. Guys, Matt, are you still there? Okay. So why don't we, we've lost the feed is my understanding. Is that right? Okay. So let's, we'll take a break. And Nomi, we'll reconnect with you for the fun half. We're going to have Matthew Film Guy on, and Jamie will join us, and we'll make this happen. But that is the, you know, we'll do a freebie Friday. So, all right, take a quick break. Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.